Midweek Drive, Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Excellent weather today. Highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 13 degrees centigrade. So I think it's fair to say it's consistent in terms of its overall output. It's going to be rather cloudy with a little light rain, but there will be some drizzle possible. Okay, so Wednesday, Noel, obviously we clearly actually have the Midweek Drive on Wednesday, don't we, Emma?
Yes,
we do. But there is a suggestion that, in fact, we work far too hard as far as a nation is concerned. And Wednesdays really should go back to that whole notion of having a half day Wednesday, a day where we could actually just take time out and relax and unwind on all sorts of areas, etc. We were very pleased to actually get a few words on this with Joel Brandon Bravo. Is his real name? Joel Brandon Bravo, hyphenated, who actually works for Travel Zoo. So he might have perhaps a little interest in terms of this. This is coming out, an interview with Joel Brandon Bravo, after which, of course, we'll be speaking to Richard Fitzwilliams about Fury, about The Judge, and Rembrandt at the National.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM. My name's Louis Savvy, director of the Sci-Fi London Film Festival.
Work-life balance, it's one of those tension-filled phrases that consistently sort of creates anxiety with human resource staff up and down the country. And yet, if we compare our own work-life balance with our fellows in Europe and a variety of other places, we might find that we're not doing as well as we think we are to address the whole notion of how do we cope with Wednesdays and how maybe returning to a half-day Wednesday could be a way forward to get that work balance sorted out, the work-life balance sorted out. We're delighted to welcome the Managing Director, UK Managing Director at the fantastic travel and lifestyle publication Travel Zoo. That would be the equally fantastic Joel Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Very well, Alex. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
Oh, it's good to speak to you. Of course, it's hyphenated. It's Joel Brandon Bravo. Let's get that thing sorted through.
And I might not sound like it, but I'm actually from the East Midlands. I'm a Nottingham lad, so just down the road.
Well, there we are. So certainly we look in terms of the way that people are continuing to tell, no, work harder, tea breaks over, lads and lasses, get back to work, etc. It's not good for us, is it?
I don't believe it is. And actually, it was very interesting for us to go out and do this research because, we know how important the annual holiday is, but there are 50 weeks of the year when people aren't on holiday. So we wanted to find out, how do people feel about that work-life balance? And, we're pretty surprised that people do want a shake-up of the working week. Over two-thirds say that they're working too hard and too many hours, and actually two-thirds again would say they would put in longer hours if they could work a four-day week or just to have a half day on a Wednesday and make up the hours on other days of the week, just to break it up a bit.
I mean, this particular survey reveals some really interesting factors. The fact that over a quarter of us say we check emails outside of work. Yes, guilty, have to do that. Weekends, all the rest of it's visas. Fifth of us worry about work outside office hours. Well, we try not to do that, but that's interesting. And nearly a quarter actually go on to say that they feel overwhelmed by modern working life. This all connectivity, it's not doing us any good, is it?
Yeah, I think that idea that we're always on and always connected is actually adding to the pressure. I mean, I know there was talk of the German government trying to stop people being able to send work-related emails after 6 p.m. The Netherlands, a four-day working week is pretty common. I think maybe we're getting a bit too work-obsessed, and that certainly seems to be the response to the survey that we had conducted.
About 150 or 60 years ago, we had the editor of the Leeds Mercury who actually went on record as saying that actually it was ridiculous for children to actually work less than 12 hours a week. Going to 10 hours a week would have been nonsense. He had one or two challenges in his own way, did Edward Baines, but obviously we seem to be going into a similar sort of route where you kind of almost need to just say, hold it, just get it right, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a long time ago, but actually it was only sort of 1994 when we pretty much stopped having the half day closing on Wednesdays. So I don't know how many of your listeners would remember that. And I think maybe we all thought that technology and flexible working practices would allow us to have more leisure time, but it doesn't seem to have panned out that way, and that's certainly not what the people who answered the survey said they were feeling.
Allowing for the fact that inevitably you get the accusation, if you gave people this free time, what would they do with it? Well, it would seem that effectively they'd kind of either relax, potter around, or possibly even get some of their own administrative work done and life things to be sorted out.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some of those things that with a third of people saying they'd get admin done, sometimes that is the sorts of things that people take time off work to get done, whether it's banking or going to the dentist. But actually, I think it's more important for people to step away both from the day-to-day work and what you end up doing at home. I think we all feel that if we spend a weekend at home, there's inevitably a long list of jobs that need doing and that actually actually what we try and do at Travel Zoo is really encourage people to not just think about the one holiday a year, but to think about weekend breaks. If you take yourself out of your home life, then it slightly forces you to actually use that downtime. I'm actually off to Wales myself this weekend and kind of hoping that the mobile signal and emails don't work there.
Yeah, well, there you go. And we mentioned, obviously, Holland and Germany and the sort of line from our European counterparts. I suspect it's a slightly different situation if we actually looked at places like China or indeed Japan or indeed perhaps America, where we seem to have a different attitude there. And once again, the pressure to actually be there seems to be mounting on a day-by-day basis.
Indeed, and I don't actually believe, and I don't think the data backs it up, that actually just putting in more and more hours necessarily makes us more productive. We've done some work with Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, who sort of helped us identify the fact that actually people will feel a better affinity with work, more motivated, more happy, actually, if employers respect that kind of work-life balance and support people in their personal lives, as well as just trying to squeeze extra hours out of them. So we don't think that this is at the expense of productivity. If anything, it might well improve it.
Any thoughts on the undergraduate growing student population, where many of them are having to actually work just to actually work their way through college and clearly be working as part of this programme side of things? Is it equally as important to have time out?
Indeed. I mean, my eldest is 20. She's going to leave university probably £20,000 or £30,000 in debt. And that probably shows through in the results of the survey. It was actually the age group between 25 and 34 that were feeling even more overwhelmed, more pressure, and worrying about work outside of working hours more than the older generation, who I guess maybe just have different concerns.
Perhaps the other thing, of course, is the notion that what seemed a great idea at the time, Sunday opening, has now become equally pressurised in its own way. So we say sort of half-day Wednesday used to be a nostalgic time. We seem to have lost Sunday as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It becomes just another day where those things that you need to pick up from town, whereas before you couldn't and you were forced to take that time to spend it with your family. Pubs opening on Sundays as well. You know, some people are actually, according to the survey, being driven to drink because they're working so hard Monday to Friday. We've got one in five workers admitting that they go drinking on a Friday. So yes, Sunday opening for pubs and shops, I think, is all just contributing to the kind of always on the go mentality.
And that'll just create more work to actually be done by healthcare workers and so on. So it's just a vicious circle. Okay, let's stop it there. Let's hold it. What can we do, Gerald, to actually address this? Is it a case of we need to set a campaign going, you know, with yourself and Travel Zoo leading the way? Is it a case of enough's enough? What's the sort of strategy?
Well, actually, the response from the survey was that people actually thought the government could do a little bit more in terms of addressing work-life balance. Over half wanting shorter worker weeks, half wanting maybe a holiday allowance to be increased, or perhaps forcing companies to actually pay for overtime rather than squeezing those extra hours. But, you know, I don't think we should sit around and wait for government to take action. At Travel Zoo, we do a lot of things to try and keep people happy and motivated. We actually finish earlier on a Wednesday, and today we've got one of our quarterly events. We're also taking the team bowling. We also have a perk, which we're very proud of, everyone really loves, is that we actually give people an extra 3 days holiday a year and pay £1,000 for them to take one of the holidays that we've promoted to our audience. So we're doing quite a lot of things ourselves as a company, and I would obviously encourage both the companies, the employers out there, and the employees to be proactive and ask to sit down with the managers and say, look, what can we do about this? How can we try and have a happier, more productive workforce?
I can see people flooding if they've got time to go to travelzoo.co.uk and find out more from all sorts of other areas. But for the moment, Gerald Brandon, bravo. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting and not too stressful interrogative session with us today on the Midweek Drive about the challenges of work-life balance and, of course, avoiding the all-hail hump day?
Absolutely. It's been great. I'm looking forward to the rest of the morning, and I'm knocking off early this afternoon.
Well, I was just going to say that, so I can take it we can look forward to hopefully featuring again in the not-too-distant future, but not on a Wednesday afternoon.
Absolutely.
Yeah. OK, or indeed Thursday from that point of view. Richard Fitzwilliams, you're probably sitting there listening to that thing, getting furious in a sort of Rembrandt-esque way and thinking all about the London Film Festival and a whole range of other factors. But how are you, sir?
Oh, I am fine.
Have you got your work-life balance sorted out?
I think that I've always had a certain work-life balance in the sense that if your interests are your work, you shouldn't be complaining. But as for this business of setting specific hours, I'm in the French 35-hour weeks, it speaks for itself if you look at the state of the country.
Oh. What can we say, Emma, when once again Richard sort of puts his finger on the pulse there?
Very thoughtful.
Very thoughtful, as ever. Contemplative. It's 12 minutes past 8 on a Thursday morning. If you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us, you can always reach us at studio@sirenonline.co.uk. But as we know, around about this time, Emma, it's time to actually just sit back and, in the words of Ed Wellman, just let the words of Richard Fitzwilliams wash over us in a kind of wonderful sort of way, basically, as he takes us through the end of the London Film Festival with a fury and probably a little touch of Rembrandt at the National. Off you go, sir.
Indeed, yes, the London Film Festival. And the winners, it isn't a fast awards ceremony. Leviathan by Andrei Zvitsev won for the best film, and Samina Javed Ahmed was named Best British Newcomer in Catch Me Daddy. These are not films I've seen, I have to say, but the main strength of this was the 150 or so feature films, and ones I'd mentioned, The Imitation Game, which we'll be discussing, of course, all these movies later when they open, and frankly, a very, very fine performance by Benedict Cumberbatch, the famous story of Breaking the Code, Reese Witherspoon in Wild, a movie that's geared for an Oscar nomination for, and no question about it, and ending with Fury, I have to say, which we'll be discussing in a few minutes, quite a mix, including some absolutely impossible and infuriating movies, such as The Duke of Burgundy, part of which the projector seemed to break down, but actually it was part of the film, and some 20 critics exited. I have to say that you don't expect that in a movie about a lesbian relationship, which was, putting it mildly, a curiosity. A very, very interesting collection of movies, and Foxcatcher I'm looking forward to discussing in more detail, because there's certainly awards buzz about that, about the famous American wrestling team at the Seoul Olympics, and a good deal more. No spoilers again. But a very, very good selection of films, and I do think that they did a favour by dividing it into a series of sections, which made it more accessible. No question at all that they had also spectacular red carpet events, and whereas I would be in favour of a full-scale awards ceremony, of course we get that with the BAFTAs, and it isn't, so to speak, a rival, it complements it.
There we are. Fantastic. Let's move on. I mean, Emma, clearly you didn't cover the London Film Festival this year. Is it the sort of thing which appeals in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... My knowledge of films is not as broad as yours, Richard, but I do love going to the cinema, and I really enjoy watching films, and it's always that beautiful moment when you come out of the cinema and you can discuss with your friends. You're like, oh, I like that bit, I like that bit. So... yeah, I would love to sort of do film reviewing, that sort of thing. And also the fact that you get to go to sort of the glitzy glamour side of it as well.
Later on this morning, Richard, of the wonderful world of Richard Burton, and indeed A Look Back in Anger with Claire Bloom.
A very powerful film, yes.
I think so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there we are. Forward to that.
Very, very strong. Burton, it's true, before he... so to speak, adjusted, which we saw subsequent to Cleopatra and in movies like From Beckett, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Taming of the Shrew and others, 1984, Equus, goodness me, yes, some very impressive ones and some others. But Elizabeth Taylor taught him the craft of cinema, and little doubt he made an indelible impression, dying tragically young, but I best not diverge. It's too fascinating, well, especially with that voice.
Indeed. And it has to be said that the Richard Burton connection continues, because next Wednesday we'll be featuring Jeff Wayne, of course, who worked with Richard in the original War of the Worlds, because, of course, Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds has become one of those multi-million selling albums that's around. So great stuff there.
Not to mention Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds, which, impressive, I thought, but made in rather a hurry.
Well,
you had certain sets that were not as convincing as they might be.
A bit like Rembrandt's paintings, perhaps.
I think we best move very, very swiftly after a comment like that onto Fury.
Okay.
I mean, this opened this Wednesday and yesterday, and it's I mean, putting it mildly, this is a powerful and realistic movie. Most of it is written and directed by David Ayer, with Brad Pitt, Shia LaBeouf, Logan Lerman, set in April 1945, a month before the end of the Second World War. This is the Allies' last push into Germany, and it centers around a five-man crew of an M4 Sherman tank, and the sergeant is Brad Pitt playing Don Wardaddy Collier. Tough performance. It has to be said, this movie has indelible images of the horror of war, and whether it's a tank moving over what's left of a corpse, which has been decompressed, you could say, into the mud that fills a great deal of this movie, or whether it's part of a man's face which is burnt onto a tank. Parts of this are very, very impressive indeed, and there's some amazing action sequences. If you want to see the unequal duel between German Tiger tanks and the American M4 Sherman tanks, this has some amazing, spectacular, and extraordinarily well-filmed and tense action sequences, and the visuals are very, very impressive indeed, as you have an induction into action of the character played by Logan Lerman, basically a typist who knows nothing about war. He doesn't shoot a Hitler Youth member because he seems so young, and seconds later a tank front of them explodes.
Spoiler, surely, Richard. I thought you gave away those sort of things, really. It's unbelievable.
That is the beginning of the movie, and subsequent to that, I'm giving away precious little, other than to say, powerful though it is, impressive though it is, with the dirt, the grime, the squalor of it, and also one particularly interesting scene where they occupy a German town, and War Daddy and his new crewmate go and meet two German girls, and this is an excuse for Norman, played by Lerman, to have...
It's interesting, the very title, the name, A Sergeant Named War Daddy, because obviously I can see the sort of the notion of the ghetto and War Daddy, as in Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, etc. Maybe War Diddy would be there. Or alternatively, it's good for the Northeast listeners, and I know Ian Lennox would appreciate War Daddy, you know. It's a different line, so it kind of covers both markets there.
Well, the Fury is the name of the tank, by the way. Yeah. It does have to be said, and this is where problems arise. It's often a lot of films been, and I find it infuriating, but when you can't understand everything people are saying, the point is frequently made while in conversation, frequently words are, you know, inaudible. You don't. But if you don't in a film...
Press subtitles.
I would have had subtitles in some films, but I would also, and this has to be mentioned, no climactic spoilers, but... If in the last 20 minutes John Wayne had been substituted for Brad Pitt, there would have been... Well, I would have noticed the difference, to be perfectly frank. Now, that is an indictment of a movie which starts off showing... Indeed, most of it shows war as it... More or less as it was. It's no Saving Private Ryan, but aspects of it, the tank battles and so on, are very similar. And then it ends by, frankly, flag-waving... I haven't seen so many Germans killed since Where Eagles Dare. That was 1969.
Well, okay, so Emma, in terms of... I'll get it sorted out, it's very confusing. Emma, in terms of going to see Fury at Lincoln, because it's currently screening at the Lincoln Odeon, will you actually be making that journey?
I think I might. I quite like any sort of historical films, but... Well, I always say I love them.
Any you could always say it's like... research for the origins of modern Britain,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I suppose. But I always come out, and if it's anything to do with the war, I'm always like, oh, they got that wrong, or that wasn't portrayed correctly enough. But, I mean... It's...
Where would we have been without Brad Pitt channeling the spirit of John Wayne?
It is... the performance is certainly good.
What about Shia LaBeouf? Is he as good as he was in Transformers?
I haven't seen Transformers, I'm happy to say. But no, he always puts in a good performance. The problem, and Logan Lerman too, was the new member of the crew, it's very much an odyssey of how you become a tough soldier, and there's no question parts of it are very, very good, but it's such a pity.
I sense you're not giving it 5 stars, Richard. I sense it's not.
I'm afraid
five
it would get 3.5.
It's a 3.5.
Simply because of the superlative tank battles. Yeah. Those are impressive, but when we have scenes of dozens and dozens of Germans simply being knocked off as
executed.
Though they were ninepins, not executed, well, really. I mean,
massacred.
A massacre implies they've no arms. Believe me, these guys mean harm.
But Richard, we live in the 21st century, the video age. If you don't have lots of shoot 'em up role-playing games, it's just not the same, is it, really? So, you know.
Well, Saving Private Ryan said it.
Call of Duty.
And also Band of Brothers. I mean, this set in Germany. Band of Brothers, this was a triumph for Spielberg because it showed how easy company, after D-Day, were involved in the invasion, firstly of France, then for Germany, and that was a superlative television series. And everyone has agreed you didn't have silly heroics in that, and there shouldn't have been in this, because it's a very good film in many, many ways. There's some images that do still haunt me. It's thoughtful in so many sections, and yet there are bad flaws. But
never
I do
mind.
Like hearing what people are saying. It does help. And my goodness me, we
Richard,
move
you've made the point. We've got to move on to Rembrandt.
To the judge.
Oh, the judge. You don't want to do Rembrandt at the National. Okay, let's
both.
All right, squeeze them in then. Time is getting tighter.
A judge directed by David Dobkin, and it's held together by fine actors, but again, you've got Hollywood intervening. You've got a contrived and stilted plot. You've got Hank Palmer, played by Robert Downey Jr., a successful defense attorney in Chicago, but he returns to his family in Indiana after his mother's funeral, and the problems with his brothers, and he sees his father, who's a judge, and they hate each other. The success has left home, and they've been resentful ever since. The father goes shopping and damages his car, and what's more, things change when the judge is had up for a hit and run. Is he guilty? And what does this do to all the relationships of the which Hank has with other members of the family and so on. The judge is Robert Duvall, and the defense attorney, played by Robert Downey Jr., and also the fact that Billy Bob Thornton is a prosecutor, these are first-class actors, and they do give performances which just about manage
and
to carry a movie that is far too long.
Don't forget Vera Farmiga.
Yes, but unfortunately she doesn't play a large enough role in the movie to remember.
Apparently, according to IMDb, people who like The Judge also like Dracula Untold. I'm not sure that says anything about that. An interesting connection there. And it also appears on the same site as the Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which could be quite interesting.
I would suggest Rembrandt The Late Works was even more interesting.
Okay.
Because here, until the 18th of January, you have a chance to see in a period that Rembrandt's personal and professional life was so turbulent and so tragic, you have a chance to see the most extraordinary masterpieces. I mean, I would recommend, if you haven't seen it, seeing Simon Scharmer's Scharmer on Rembrandt, because this, looking at the last 2 decades of his life, but also looking at an exhibition which I can simply say is absolutely sublime. I mean, it is amazing to see self-portraits, to see his portrayal of love in The Jewish Bride, to see his son Titus in a monk's habit, which was a very, very strong image, to see a man in armor, which, frankly, I grew up with a postcard of that. I'd never seen it. Is in fact from Glasgow, and I'm really an incredible experience. So many of his etchings. This is one of the finest exhibitions, and I couldn't recommend it highly enough. It really is something that, well, it's a genius, and his climactic years, and however problematic and difficult his personal and professional lives were, and they were extraordinarily problematic, you see his genius and its full flowering. I couldn't recommend it more. You really, really
Rembrandt's The Late Works at the National. Of course, it's in the Sainsbury Wing exhibition, running, as you rightly said, Richard, from the 15th of October through to the 18th of January. We should really do a location report there, actually.
Yes, well, I think a good idea, actually. Yeah. A very, very good idea. Yeah. These are the final years that defined a master, and for once the blurb is absolutely right.
Well, there we are. And it's not Rembrandt, the works that were late. It's Rembrandt, the late works. Or the late Rembrandt. The works of the late Rembrandt, perhaps. Anyway, at the National Theatre. Emma.
National Gallery.
You're quite right. You think, yes, this is straight in there, Richard, on the ball, spotting that sort of slight error that crept in there. Okay, Emma, last two questions for Richard at 27 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock.
Of course, Richard. Have you enjoyed your time on the show this morning?
Enormously.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Oh, yes, indeed. I look forward to it.
You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter.
And as a little sort of bonus, Emma, we have a little mystery voice online. Mystery voice, would you like to identify yourself? In fact, not identify yourself. Would you like to just give a few words that see if Emma can identify mystery voice, who you might happen to be, mystery voice?
Hello.
Hello.
Emma.
Prone to contacting you at like 1 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
1:30.
Yeah. There we are. Yeah, it is indeed the person we've been confusing with you initially. I have been, etc. Of course, it's Jessica Ward. Well done, Jessica. You're off. First of all, what happened with the netball yesterday?
We didn't win. Oh. It was against Birmingham. Yeah, it was really sad.
So what was the score?
I actually can't remember.
Oh, my word.
Tragic desires.
She's blacked
out. Not worth remembering.
Anyway, you are about to get on your train. So are you presumably at Lincoln Station at present, or have you moved from?
No. I'm in Peterborough.
Peterborough? She's made it to Peterborough.
Yeah.
And where are you heading down to at this present time, Jessica? What are you doing?
I'm heading off to London, King's Crossing, and going to be receiving my Gold Duke of Edinburgh from St. James Palace.
Exactly.
This afternoon.
Which is probably just one of the few excuses, though, we have the authentic sound effect there of the Peterborough train guide actually announcing all the travel news live on air at 8:30. What more do you want? It's brilliant, you know? He probably asked for a bonus now, but then again, we've talked earlier, so what the heck? Emma, have you got any words of advice for Jessica? What should she do? Because, you know, obviously, you know, who knows what exciting things a lass from New Zealand who's on the Isle of Man could sort of come up with, really.
Well, congratulations for your Duke of Edinburgh award.
Oh, thank you.
I hope all goes well today.
Yeah.
I hope travelling in London. Stay safe.
Yeah,
it's my home city.
Yes, this is the point. I thought it was important, Emma, that you had that chance to sort of share those words because, you know, you never know what happens when you're going into London.
Don't make friends on the tube.
Okay, I'll stay away from that.
I have a sense in so many ways that London might not yet be ready for Jessica Ward. But, you know, it'll happen. That's the important thing. There was an awful lot of training information there. He seems to have quietened out now, which is good. That's marvellous stuff. So at least we're sorted from that. Okay, still to come on the show, we'll be talking to Stephen Fogan, who'll be talking about wills and assets and how it's never too soon to start making a will. Nothing to do with your journey to London, Jessica, but have you actually made that will out there as yet?
I'm writing it down as writing it down.
It's very good. Finger on the pulse from that point of view. Well, I think, you know, inevitably we need to throw those last two questions to young Jessica Ward. So, Emma, off you go.
Of course. Jessica, have you enjoyed your brief time on the show today?
Of course.
And
yeah.
Will you be joining us next week?
Yes, I will. In the studio.
Fantastic.
Exactly. Yes, all sort of great stuff there. I was thinking of Last Train to London, but I don't think we'll actually go with that. I think we'll probably actually go with something which deals with time slots and all the rest of the bits and pieces. Gladys Knight and the Pips. Midnight Train to Georgia. It's a cliche, isn't it? I know it's a cliche. Sorry. And this show normally avoids cliches like the plague. But what the hey. Have a splendid time in London and ensure that the palace is duly sort of blessed by your presence. Enjoy the whole thing. Jessica Ward, aww, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you so much. Bye.